So, well, I'm willing to go for this, Tim, if you are. I never pass up an opportunity to talk to people about different kind of things. I've done several workshops today, and this one is a little bit, it's got a couple stories in it and so forth that are repeats from others, so I'm just glad I got brand new people in here.
Yeah.
So the five offerings you never thought to ask for is kind of a catchy title. I tried to make it catchy to get people in. Really, we're talking about the work of the Church of the Nazarene Foundation. The Church of the Nazarene Foundation is 19 years old. We're a fully owned subsidiary of the denomination, and our focus is on charitable giving through bequests, estates, charitable trusts, gift annuities, non-cash gifts, and various kind of things that people might give at the end of their lives. And so when we think about the church and the offerings, this PowerPoint I actually created, you work with pastors, so I'm kind of a little bit of it, I'm telling pastors, this is how you ask for gifts in your church and kind of make this thing happen. Usually think to ask for cash and checks, tithes and offerings, and perhaps faith promise, because those things fit in the offering plate. There's a lot of charitable giving that won't fit in the offering plate. You're unlikely to get a deed to a piece of real estate in an offering plate. Unlikely to get stock certificates. However, you could. You can drop stock certificates in the offering plate, and it's a charitable gift. But there's just a lot of ways that we need to open our minds up, because 93% of what America owns is not cash. The 7% is what we tend to focus on with churches. So I encourage the pastors to ask for non-cash gifts, ask for things that are outside of the norm, ask for gifts that might come through an estate. And part of the reason is because others are fishing in our pond. So the swell of nonprofits in America, the skill of fundraisers, the mass of fundraisers, means that people in the churches are just getting asked all the time for charitable gifts, and especially if they show any urge to give to something, they're collapsed upon. And there is a genuine science to asking for money, moving people's hearts, getting them to a place where they're willing to make some kind of a gift. And we pay attention to this kind of science, obviously, because we're fundraisers. Roger here is with Mid-American Nazarene University. I'm with the denomination. But we really have the goal of helping people do what the Lord's telling them to do in their heart. What's the Lord wants you to do? And not trying to squeeze the last nickel out of anybody or anything like that. I always tell people, we're not trying to cut the children out of anything. The Bible tells us that a righteous man leaves an inheritance for his children and his children's children. So we're not trying to cut anybody's inheritance out. We would like to cut out some of what the IRS gets when you go to heaven. You know, if you can cut the taxes down, that's kind of a good thing. But It's a good spiritual holy thing to inherit something. If you've ever inherited anything, I did just a couple years ago. Inherited the family farm and some money from my dad and stuff, and this felt really good. I don't want to take that away from anybody. But we also have lots of stories where people have left transformational gifts to the church. So non-cash gifts, especially estate gifts, can blossom. They can be bigger than you would think that people have. And all the time we have people who make gifts from their estate, and everybody's, I didn't know they had that much money. You know, somehow we baby boomers who are dying at $15,000 a day we don't like to talk about our money or what we have, but we've been good savers and good hiders, and all of that's going to somebody else somewhere along the line. So it's right for the church to ask about it and to think about it. So transformational gifts is what I would define them as, anything that's outside of the ordinary. It's something designed to provide for a sustainable future. There's a lot of in the Bible about preparing financially for the future. We see seven fat cows, 7 years of fat cows, followed by 7 years of lean cows. And any church that is thinking ahead is going to take their blossoming years and prepare for the possibility of a couple bad years down the road. Churches that survived the pandemic did so because they were teaching stewardship, not just asking for money for money's sake, but they were teaching people that we're supposed to give. They can allow the church to do something new, and the church has an opportunity to be a part of an estate or a legacy plan. That's really where our focus at the foundation comes in. When I'm talking to pastors, I get various myths and objections. And pastors are funny because I can go to a group of pastors almost anywhere in America and start talking about different topics, and their minds will go to the first things right away. I start talking about legacy gifts, and they go, "Well, my people don't have anything." We're a small church. Our people don't have anything. And man alive, how many gifts have we gotten out of small churches? I was in a man's home, 96 years old. And you're not going to like this part, but he was mad at his regional college. So he said, "I want to give my money someplace else." And his church probably runs 15 people, you know. And he wrote out $1 million check. And I think he said, my church, you know, they can't handle $1 million. There's only 15 of them. That'd be $100,000 a piece. He said, "That's not right. I want to do something meaningful," which is very often the case. Somebody wants to do something meaningful. They want their gift to make a difference down the road. And to think that there are no resources is ridiculous, because America is just wealthy. We are leaving money on the table if we as pastors say our church just doesn't have any money, because it's probably not true.
There was a gentleman that the church that Mark and I attended for a time together, and he passed away, and they had a little auction, and they sold $2 million worth of his cars. Mm-hmm. I kind of heard that he liked antique cars.
Yeah.
He had oil cans that were worth, you know, $500 a piece.
So some of those are display items, but a lot of baby boomers have got assets that they're just sitting on and not telling anybody about, you know. And it seems like the baby boomers have been such good savers and such good planners for the future that they kind of overdo it. You know,
our parents Depression era.
Yeah.
They
so
they knew how to do without. So
absolutely. Come on in and join us, please.
I've decided to
set this one out and talk from here, but thank you for coming. So when it comes to the gifts and this myth that there are no resources, the baby boomers who have done such a good job of saving, there's never really enough money. You know, wealth is so relative here. So let me ask you a question. Is $1 million enough to retire on? If you have $1 million, can you retire? And say you're 65 years old and a million. Can you do that?
I could squeak by.
Squeak by? A lot of people would say yes. But if you're 65 years old and you have a million, you think you need $2 million to retire. If you have $2 million and you're 65 years old, you think you need $3 million, so you never really get there. Thanks for coming, folks. If more people come in, I'm going to stand up. I've been sitting down. I've been standing up for the other presentations.
Could you go back just to just give a recap of that first slide real quick?
Oh, I believe I can. So this is the seminar, things we should ask for, and it's very pastor related. Do I have any pastors come in? No, we don't have enough. I haven't had a pastor in a workshop all day long. Usually I'm talking to all pastors, so I kind of have to tune it a little bit different for laypersons. But we're talking about gifts that don't fit in the offering plate, and acknowledging the fact that all kinds of nonprofits are asking to be in everybody's wills, asking for their legacy gifts, asking for their estate, asking for their real estate. It all happens. So with pastors, I talk to them about transformational gifts. The fact that baby boomers are dying 15,000 people a day, baby boomers. We are the wealthiest generation that has ever existed in the face of the earth. We got more assets, more money, more leftover assets. And often, baby boomers, especially the oldest of the baby boomers, are going to heaven later than everybody else. They're going to heaven in their 90s, and their kids are 70. And so, you know, this whole concept of save a little bit up and leave my kids something to make it on, their kids are already living in bigger houses and driving fancier cars than they did. And so the churches can really be beneficiaries of some nice gifts in there. And the baby boomers are rather specific. They like their names on their gifts. So if you're attending the Ferguson Church of the Nazarene and you want an endowment for the Ferguson Church of the Nazarene, you can make an endowment, and it'll be the Roger Alexander Endowment for the Church of the Nazarene in Ferguson forever under that name. Baby, I presume that most of us, or some of you are a little younger here, but millennials in the church are not in the least bit impressed with having their name attached to their gift or having an endowment that's going to last a long time. Much more interested in giving money now and making it useful. So when I'm talking about these transformational gifts that are legacy-oriented from estates, it's pretty much the baby boomer crowd we're after at that point. So there are myths and objections. As I said, I usually use this set of slides with pastors. And pastors nearly always come back, "Oh, my church doesn't have any money." And there are secrets all over the churches. I promise you, there's God's got enough resources to run every Nazarene church. He just needs us to be responsible with it and use it correctly. So pastors will say, "We don't like talking about money or dying," to which I say, I was called to preach when I was 11 years old, went to college to preach, went to seminary to preach, got a doctorate degree to preach, and then I turned about 47 years old, and God said, "Now I want you to specialize, and I want you to go places and talk about death and money," which is what I do.
You avoided for 47 years.
So I have to make this fun, I have to do this thing. We're going to talk about death and money, we're going to make it that way, but it is true that pastors don't like it. However, Jesus in the Bible did a lot of talking about death and money, and for some reason, if you can think about the first time you did something that scares you. We were joking earlier about the freshmen at Mid-America when they put them on the telephone, they have to call somebody. Will you give 10? Terrified, I'm calling somebody asking for $10. And I can remember doing that with, I had a good pastor when I was in junior high, and he knew I was called to preach. He'd take me calling, would knock on doors, people would slam the door and all that kind of stuff. That was terrifying for me. For some reason, preachers just have a built-in fear to talk about money. And what's really interesting is that the studies show us that pastors think they talk about money all the time, and the people in the pew wish their pastors would talk more about money because it's such a biblical concept and just not overdone out there at all. These gifts are too complicated. One of the reasons that we have a Nazarene foundation is to handle complicated gifts in local churches, and they are complicated, but we have the expertise in order to make this happen. Objections, is it's difficult to process these gifts? We have the solution. We have the Church of the Nazarene Foundation works a little bit like a community foundation for the community called the Church of the Nazarene in the United States. And our people are already generous. Well, that's very possibly true. Generous people tend to get more generous. Generosity is contagious. And so when we have a reason for people to give, and they believe that this is going to be very effective. We got too many people in the room. I'm standing up. I said, if more people are coming in, I'm going back to standing up, where I'm actually more comfortable in this role. So passing up the myths and objections as to what's going on here, legacy giving isn't important. So we're going to talk some about legacy giving and these gifts that we want to see happen in a local church. And so as baby boomers, being the richest people in history, there's a feeling on the inside that we ought to be doing something with all the blessings that God has given us. God has blessed us so much. Our children are less likely to need money than most generations have been already, good jobs and big houses and all that. And so legacy giving is very important. We can also predict that legacy giving, when it happens in a church, is typically a larger gift than the regular giving. On average, about at least five times as much as a person gives regularly. So if we're working with somebody and they're putting their estate plan together and they say, "I'd like to tithe on my estate, so when I go to heaven, I want 10% to go to the church, divide all the rest of it up to my kids," then that 10% is likely to be significantly more than that person is giving on a regular basis. And we're afraid it will cut into the weekly offering. And I mentioned to folks before we got more crowded in the room that this is typically a presentation I do with pastors. I thought I'd have a lot of pastors in here since it was a district event. Are there any pastors in here? Well, then you'll get what I tell your pastors whenever I have an opportunity to tell them, and that is we're afraid it's going to cut into the regular weekly offering, and I just have never experienced that. You know, if somebody says, well, I'll put $100,000 in my will, usually give $10,000 to the church, so I don't have to give anything in the next 10 years, it's all covered. That mind just does not go through God's disciples. It just doesn't go through their minds and work that way. So just not a fear. So five offerings that we never think to ask for, one of them being non-cash. 93% of what America owns is not in cash. And so so we talk about gifting things that are fun to give away. The whole Testament is full of people who were marching across the Holy Land, singing songs, walking to the temple of God with something that was very precious to them to give away to the Lord. It can be a real spiritual benefit to give something away that we're well attached to. Since I don't see any of you that were in here in a previous one, I'll retell a story. I had a couple call the foundation and said we want to make an offering, want to give a gift, and we need somebody to come by the house. So I said, I'll be in your state in a few weeks. We'll make sure that we have time to come and see you. So when I got there, they said, the Lord told us to give something away, and we don't know what it's for. We believe it's for missions, but it's for whatever God says to use it for, and we're going to trust you for that. And they slid a paper bag across the table. So we opened up the paper bag, and it was full of gold. It was full of gold bullion. And I got the impression in talking to people, it was tens of thousands of dollars, but they could have, in all likelihood, written a check. God didn't say write a check. God said give this thing away. And so in giving this thing away, they had a spiritual, they had tears in their eyes. I kind of took it that this gold had been in their family for a long time, that the grandkids played with it at Christmas time and all these things. But God said give this away. There was spiritual maturity occurring when this gift happened. So we received it. I took it back to Global Mission, and they said, we have exactly the right size project. We know what God intended to fund with this. That's really good. I got on an airplane with that gold. That's also the day that I learned that the TSA has questions for you if you get on the airplane with tens of thousands of dollars worth of gold. So that happened, but we made it there and got it there safely and liquidated the gold and put it to work in God's mission field. So a lot of non-cash gifts, such as stock, real estate, agricultural product, grain, cattle, and so forth. There's a lot of reasons to give these away. So if the asset comes in this way, let's say the asset's got a lower cost basis than what it's going to sell for, the donor sells the asset, some of it goes to the IRS for what we call capital gains tax. It would be income tax on the grain. And then after the taxes, there's some money left over. If we get to the point where the donor gives the asset, let's say they're using the foundation, it could certainly happen through the local church, but the foundation or the local church sells the asset, the gift of the asset bypasses the tax, and there's more money left over. See before, where a chunk of it goes to the IRS? Now it doesn't. This is when the rubber hits the road, this is exactly what's happening. We lost some people. They must have thought they were in the Jesus film one. This is not the Jesus film. Although I'm sure this... Oh, okay. So back row left too. When I turned around, the back row's gone. So that's all right. So this gift of non-cash bypassing the capital gains happens well with stock. So if you buy stock at $100 a share, it goes to $200 a share, you sell it, you're going to own some capital gains tax on the difference there. If you give that stock away, then the nonprofit, in this case the Church of the Nazarene Foundation, if it's on behalf of whoever, the local church or whatever, is going to be able to sell it without any capital gains tax. And that's a major reason for handling these non-cash gifts. The sale of certain assets are taxed as ordinary income, such as farm-produced grain and similar assets to that. Since we're in Missouri, if you have farmers in your church who are selling cattle, hay, grain, wheat, soybeans, corn, just about anything that comes off of a farm, and tithing to your church, the likelihood is they could give the agricultural product away. Everything that they've invested in growing the product, their fertilizer and seed and diesel costs and so forth, still comes off the farm. None of the income goes on the farm. It's pretty easy for the church to handle. We handle hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of grain a year at the foundation. And so they back their semi up to the elevator, and instead of saying, this is my corn, I want to sell it, they say, this corn belongs to the Church of the Nazarene. It's about as easy to do as you can imagine, and it saves taxes in nearly every case. So if you're working with your church, this is a good one. Giving the asset before the sale reduces the donor's adjusted gross income. And these are taxed as capital gains. So in some cases with the agricultural product, for example, you're bypassing ordinary income. With the sale of these stock, real estate, and investment assets, you're bypassing capital gains. Have I put you to sleep yet, boring you? Is this what you came for?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah. They're just looking for seeing whether we're doing the right thing or not, because I can go a lot of different directions. So giving the asset before the sale bypasses the taxes, and that's something you really want to do. Let's talk about bequests. Well, 33% of charitable giving goes to churches. Only 8% of estate giving goes to churches. That's a pretty wide variety there. And the churches pretty much had a lock on this thing called tithe or charitable giving. Unfortunately, that's caused us in some places in churches to not be great at treating donors well. For example, I go into Nazarene churches all the time and just ask a simple question. How do you thank the people that are giving you money? And y'all, none of you are pastors, but you could tell me, how does your church thank you for your gifts?
We get a letter.
In January?
Mm-hmm.
Get a letter in January. It says, dear member, or does it say, dear Roger?
It says, Roger.
Okay. Often it says, dear member. And there's a little spreadsheet attached. Thank you for your contributions. This is your tax receipt. And that's what happens. And so because a part of the motivation has been guilt, you know, tithe, and you should give because this is God and God said to give, it also caused us not to be anything like the rest of the world when it comes to treating donors. You know, it's good. It's okay. I tell pastors all the time, it's okay to be nice to donors and thank them four times a year. You know, so thank them four times a year instead of once a year. And I also say, if you really want to do, you know, pick a member that's given. Let's say somebody's got $60,000 worth of income. They're given $6,000 a year. It's $500 a month. That's a pretty healthy donor in most nonprofits. So if you want to see how to treat a donor, pick a little nonprofit in your town and start writing them a check for $500 every month and sending it to them. And then evaluate to see how their response is on their thank you. Because I promise you, you're going to start getting phone calls and personal visits from the CEO and everybody that nonprofit, because that's a significant gift. But we in churches do this and probably need to step that up a little bit. That's part of what leads to the fact that we are under-harvesting estate gifts in churches and why so many of them go other places. It's because the universities and the museums and the heart associations and the hospices and the public universities, everybody are so involved in with their donors, so connected to their donors, that it's natural for them to say, and you should think about leaving something. Let me help you put us in your will. So they do a lot of that. And so they're asking, and really the difference between churches that get legacy gifts and churches that don't is that churches who get them have told their people, here's how you can give through a legacy to through your estate to our church.
Like give one final time.
Yeah. Out of life's blessings. I mean, this whole thing is all spiritual. We have such a benefit over all the museums and universities and everybody else, the hospitals and so forth. They all have to say, let me tell you about my mission. Here's what we're doing. Look at the good we're doing for people. And we just have the Lord who's done so much for us. I mean, our story is so much easier there that we should be harvesting more bequests through gifts and estates. We're not trying to take the family farm. Nobody wants to do that. The Bible says that a righteous man leaves an inheritance for his family. We're just trying to help people be good stewards of what God has blessed them with throughout their life. We are also trying to help people leave less to the IRS, because a lot of people leave money to the IRS unnecessarily by not doing their estates properly. So imagine if every Nazarene left a legacy gift to their local church, what it'd be like. And this is how it tends to work. A state gift goes into a will or a living trust, and then the donor either bequests a fixed dollar amount or a percentage of the estate, and it goes to children in ministry. The Mennonites have a plan where they ask their people to adopt their church as one of their children. And the Mennonites are actually really good at this, at estate giving. They say, if you have 4 children, let's divide your estate 5 ways and let your church be included as one. If you have 10 children, you get to divide it 11 ways. Adopt your children as church as one of them. So a will or a trust is one we probably need to spend a little bit of time on. And Roger, if I might take advantage of you to pass a few things out here. I would like for each of you to have one of our key brochures, and also this little card, which I might have some more of in my pocket. So the little card here this little card, when it comes to getting a will done, 60% of America is not in good shape if they were to die today. Some of them have done something, but they don't really have their plan together. Most people have procrastinated it. So if you were to back up in the world and just take a good look at the whole world and say, God's blessed North America more than he's blessed any other people. The baby boomers are the richest people who have ever lived on the face of the earth. It would make sense that those are the most responsible people with their assets when they die. But the reality is we tend to procrastinate this. And I know it would not be anybody in the room, but there are people in the world who have procrastinated their will done. And our first recommendation is that you go to an attorney and get a will or a trust in place. If you haven't or already are decided you're not going to, I encourage you to use the website on here, which is the Foundation's website, or scan the QR code, and it will lead you to a place where in about an hour or so, you can start answering questions, and it will produce a will for your state. In this case, it would be Missouri. It will produce a Missouri will, durable power of attorney, health care power of attorney, health care directive, and can, in some cases, produce for you beneficiary documents for your bank or your IRA or some of the other investments that you might have. Use this. Take this to your church. I think if Nazarene pastors just said, it's good stewardship to have a will, you want to be the one who decides who's going to raise your children. Otherwise, the probate court judge is going to do that. You need to be the one who decides what's going to happen to your money, or the probate court judge is going to decide what happens. Then there's no chance that a probate court judge is going to give any to the local church. So use this, and if the Lord leads you, leave a little bit to the church. If you just put this out there, there would be wills everywhere that would happen. And in the unfortunate circumstance that you die, we'd be better off because you would have been the one who controlled what happens. This is the essential step right here. Get something done. Make this thing happen. Any questions about any of this?
Is this available to anyone or just
members? Nope, it's available to anybody, and it is free to you. However, we pay for the service, so we're not paying by the will. We don't care how many people use it. And the company that is doing these wills in the background for us does 4,000 of them a week across the United States. They keep up on top of all the wills. And what's really interesting is we can see that people find us. Once they use this service, they might start on the Red Cross and end at the Church of the Nazarene Foundation. We can see where they started and how we got there, but we can see if you started by typing in our address. And then follow the instructions at the end. You got to print it up, and in most states, you're going to have some witnesses, and you're going to have it notarized and so forth. This is brand new for us. We've just been doing this a few weeks, really. We have 43 people that have done their wills, and if you count primary, secondary, and tertiary gifts, were at $7.5 million or so dollars that could potentially show up in Nazarene churches. By the way, we distribute about $10 million a year as a foundation to Nazarene churches. I haven't told any of the fun stories yet here, have I? Let me tell you a good
10-year story. I like that 10-year story.
The 10-year story?
Yeah, you got the first 2 years.
You want that one? I can tell that story. This is a good one for wills and estate because it actually happened through a will. Man had a lot of money. Some people think you need a trust if you have a lot of money, but he had a lot more than we knew. But anyway, we met him at a district assembly and worked with he and his lawyer on getting his will done. He had no children, and he said, "I'd like for half to go to the Church of the Nazarene Foundation. I'll let my brother decide whether it goes to Alabaster or the local church or whatever, you know." Well, he died. He was killed in an accident really early in life, 64 years old. And so the attorney called me just a few weeks ago and said, she had a really southern accent. She's talking real fast, and I'm writing down. And I said, "Okay, tell me again, who are you and what estate are we talking about here?" You know, so she thought I knew all this stuff, and she's going on and on. And afterwards, I looked at my notes, and she had explained that the will says the foundation is supposed, they're supposed to start a trust. The foundation is going to get 5% of his estate every year for 10 years. And they didn't get it done the first year, so the first two are ready. And I wrote these numbers down, and I thought, she either said he has $2 million, approximately $2 million, and 5% is $90,000, and so we're going to send you the first two $90,000 checks. I couldn't tell from my notes. Or she said 5% of his estate is $2,090,000, and we're going to get two checks for $2,090,000. So I didn't really want to call her back and say I was incompetent enough to really understand what you were saying. So I'll just wait for the letter to come. So I called the office. I said, "Be watching for a letter that comes in." And when they opened up the envelope, it was two checks for $2,090,000 each. So we're going to get eight more of those $2 million checks. It'll be a $20 million gift all the way through. Well, that's really good. And it did go to the foundation, talked to the brother, and he said, "Well, I don't know, we got several projects, we can do various things, but he really loved his Nazarene church. I think they got some debt. How would we find out how much their debt is?" I said, "Well, I'll volunteer to call the pastor." So called the pastor and left him a message. He didn't call back. Waited a day or so, called the pastor, he didn't call back. Third time I called him, he was on a walk, and he said, "You know, I'm kind of busy. I'm looking for a restroom right now. Could you just call me back some other time?" So he later told me that he thought I was a telemarketer from Nazarene headquarters and that I wanted to sell him something. I said, no. I just want to know how much your debt is because we have an estate that's closed and the family wants to pay off the church's debt. And I would say at that point, the tone of the conversation changed pretty significantly. And I think there was a visitation of the Holy Spirit on the other end of the phone because he was pretty well moved by God's Spirit. And it turned out it was around $320,000. I said, "We're going to send you a check." And so we worked out a time where I could actually come and hand him a check. That's a pretty big check. But went back to the family and told them $320,000. I said, "Oh, we thought it'd be more than that." "Well, they probably got some maintenance needs. Let's just make it $700,000. Mm-hmm. So I called the pastor back up. He answered on the first ring. Yeah. I think I'm in his phone now. And I said, more good news here. We're going to just round that 320 up to 700,000. And he said, "Is this what you do for a living? You just call pastors up and tell them you're sending them money?" I said, "Well, it's a little more complicated than that. But sometimes, you know, I get to do this fun thing and make this happen." That couldn't have happened without some involvement. In this case, it was the foundation that was involved in helping this individual create a will or a trust. If he had died intestate without a will or trust in place, it would have been bad news. It would all gone to wherever the judge said it's going to go. So, is there anybody in here who'd like to explain the difference between a will and a trust and why you would need one over the other? I'd like to make sure there's not like an estate attorney here or something. So a will is a set of instructions that says, "When I die, do this." And a trust is a set of instructions that says, "When I die, do these things. But if these things happen before I die, do this. And after I die, do these things." So a trust allows you the opportunity to rule from the grave as such. So you can do a broader range of time. A will is going to go through a probate court. A trust doesn't have to. So in a trust, this would be a little like me going to the airport with my suitcase. If I needed to step in the restroom, I could say to my wife, "Would you watch my briefcase for me, you know, my suitcase for me?" And that's because I trust her. I've established a trust relationship. I wouldn't say to a stranger, "Watch my suitcase." But I have an asset. It needs stewarded. I can't do it. I'm putting you in charge of that. That's what a trustee does for a trust. They're more expensive. The attorneys like them because they can do more things, a little more flexible. A will is going to go through probate court, which if you've ever walked through anybody's estate, you're looking at a year in most cases, 2 years sometimes, to get through an estate through probate. So the will doesn't have the advantage of bypassing probate. If you have a die with a car and it goes through probate, the judge is going to have to say yes to your executor, you may sell the car. In a trust, you can just sell the car because you're saying to the probate court, we don't need you, we've got this covered. In both cases, they have to do certain things, they have to cover debts and so forth, but a trust says to the judge, we don't need you. And it does give you that right to rule from the grave and do some other things. If you have a cat that you're particularly fond of, you can leave instructions for how to care for your cat when you die. I suggest you make your Nazarene pastor the trustee of your cat. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? And so usually there's pastors in the room when I do this, but then you could also leave $2 million for the care of your cat. You know, if you leave your pastor your cat and $2 million to take it on really nice vacations and good restaurants and stuff, your pastor will love taking care of your cat. That'd be awesome. Yeah. So the trust allows you to do things before and after. Some reasons that people might use a trust. This is unfortunate, but it happens to us all the time, and that is when people are trying to give gifts to their children, they recognize that either their kids don't need the money or they don't trust their kids with the money. And that would be because if a child has suffered an addiction, let's say to gambling or a drug or something like that, dumping $1 million on them is not a wise thing. Dumping $20,000 a year forever is a much wiser thing for somebody like that, because you don't want to dump assets on somebody that's got an addiction and has proven that they're going to be weak to that. So there can be a lot of reasons to use a trust and specific purposes out there to make those things happen. What this little card will get you to is a will. Even if you're planning to schedule a time with an attorney and get a will or a trust done and take some legal advice, I'd advise you to do this thing right away. Because if you don't have anything in place, you've been procrastinating it for several years, and you at least get one in case the unimaginable horrible happens immediately. Then anytime you do another will or do one with a lawyer or something, it'll cover it up and erase all the ones before it. Any questions about bequests and wills? So we can't help you with legal questions, but we can help you with the website that creates your will if you have any questions there. And we can help you make sure that the Nazarene gifts go to the right place, or for that matter, any of your charitable gifts, as long as it's a charitable organization we agree with. Okay, so you can leave money through the Nazarene Foundation, the Billy Graham Association, or American Family Association, or Samaritan's Purse, or your local homeless shelter, or anything you want through us. Just don't leave us money for something like Planned Parenthood. We don't want to handle that gift. But if it's something within Christ's kingdom that we agree with, we'd certainly be glad to handle that for you at your death. So if you use that tool that I'm giving you, it's going to ask a question. Do you want to make a gift to the Church of the Nazarene Foundation? When you answer that yes, it's going to say, where do you want this to go in the Church of the Nazarene? And that's where you type in the name of your church, or Mid-American Nazarene University, Nazarene Theological Seminary, Alabaster Fund, World Evangelism Fund, whatever you want your money to go to, it'll go to it after you click yes on Church of the Nazarene Foundation. All that clear? Good. Good. So endowments, many churches don't think of doing this, and this is a great thing for preparing for the future. This is a great thing for when you have seven fat cows to wait for seven skinny cows. And sometimes people think that endowments have to be millions of dollars. They really don't. We actually have a child sponsorship endowment that's only $8,000. So if you're sponsoring children in the Church of the Nazarene, you give $30 a month to sponsor those children. That's a wonderful thing. We have people call up and say, what happens if I die? Who's going to sponsor my child? I want the money to keep going. And we'll say, either leave $8,000 in your will or give us $8,000 in stock or something right now. And that will produce the $30 a month. until Jesus comes back, because our goal is to keep the buying power the same. So we'll grow that $8,000 in addition to the distributions until someday it'll be $35 for a child and $40 for a child. But the goal is a perpetual one out there. We could do the same thing for, I think I heard that your children's camp is $225 or $250 a year. $10,000 scholarship in the name of your church will give your church the opportunity to send a kid to camp every year for forever. That's cool. That's really cool. So you can leave the endowment in your gift at the end. It hasn't been a very Nazarene thing, but your Presbyterian churches and Lutheran churches and some of the what we might call the older high church denominations are very familiar with this. And so if you really love your church, you want to do an endowment, it can be various things. We had one lady that attended a very small church. She was worried about it. She knew her tithe was one of the largest gifts in the church. And she said, when I die with it, what are they going to do? And so we asked her what her tithe was, and we worked the formula backwards on an endowment and said, well, she wanted the church to get the equivalent of her tithe for 20 years. Punched the numbers in, it came up to $400,000. She said, oh, I'd love to do that. Wrote a check out for $400,000, made the thing happen. She's now in heaven. But the DS has a lot of fun with it because he can tell the incoming pastor, we got one tither. I guarantee there's one tither. She's in heaven already, but her tithe just keeps coming in from the Nazarene Foundation. So we can do endowments for any local church. We're done here at 3:45? Okay. All right, good. Well, then let's move faster. They endow money for ministry until Jesus comes back. We will do them as small as $5,000. Usually a $5,000 one is, okay, this is the initial gift. We're going to ask our family to give. We can name these things. So if you want the Smith Endowment for the Ferguson Church of the Nazarene, you can have the Smith Endowment for the Ferguson Church of the Nazarene. And all those things that I was talking about. Charitable gift annuities are a great deal when interest at the bank is low and people have a lot of years under their belt. So because bank interest has gone up some recently, they're not quite as desirable as they were, but they still work really well. If you're 80 years old, if you're 90 years old, we can give you 9.1 for the rest of your life. So a 90-year-old person can take a $10,000 CD and give it to the Church of the Nazarene Foundation. We'll give them $910 back every year of their life. That's 9.1 guaranteed forever. Even if we run out of money, we're still got to give the 9,100. But we're not planning to run out of money. We're going to invest that and grow it as much as possible. It's an irrevocable gift. When you go to heaven, the rest of that money can go wherever you've designated it, such as to your local church. So these have been around for 100 years. You'll hear Moody Radio and everybody else talking about gift annuities. And they are a little bit of a complicated gift. We can write them in 48 states, and one of those is Missouri. One of them is Illinois, for that matter, and just about everything around here. As long as you're not in Alabama or Hawaii, we can write your gift annuity and make that happen. And it will benefit your local church or anything you designate.
I mentioned earlier to Mark that for people who already have their estate and never thought about giving to their local church or some area of ministry, it doesn't cost anything besides Mark's staff some time to do this. You don't have to pay a lawyer $500 or $1,000 to modify your will so that you can give $25,000 to your church at your passing. Mm-hmm. You can do this. You could do a gift annuity during your lifetime.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost the expense of redoing your will or trust or anything like that.
Yep, they're great gifts, and they work just like that. They're complicated on our end, but they're simple for the donor. Donor writes a check and gets annual payments back. You know, gets annual annuity payments back. So if you're an annuity fan, and you like to make charitable gifts, they're a great combo tool to make those happen. And then let's talk about charitable trusts. We have a number of different kind of charitable trusts we can do. These typically start with an appreciated asset. And these are usually bigger things, but the ones that we tend to do are rental houses. So people have rental homes, and they depreciate everything they can depreciate on to pay less tax all the way through. Pretty soon their cost basis is down here and the sale is up here. Let's say your cost basis is $50,000 in this house, but the house is actually worth $2,000, $200,000. You're going to pay capital gains tax on $150,000 on that, and people just don't like to do that. So you can actually give that house into a charitable trust that we would write. We'd create the trust. This is the kind of trust, it's different than your revocable trust. It's irrevocable. It's going to have a tax return. Donor's going to get a K-1 for their money back on it, but it's a split interest gift. Benefits the donor for the rest of their life, benefits the church at the end of their life. But let's say this cash, let's take that illustration I just gave. The house has got a $50,000 basis, $200,000 worth of value. You donate that into the charitable remainder trust. And let's say it's a 5% trust. $200,000 goes in, you're going to get $10,000 a year. But it's not guaranteed like the gift annuity. It's 200, you're going to get 5% of whatever the value of the is still in the bank. And we're going to do our best to beat 5% and get as much as possible out of that. We've had these that started around 2012, 2013, and the money is way higher than it was when the people gave the real estate. And then the remainder goes to ministry. So in one case, 50 acres of farmland, the farmer was getting, he was making after taxes $3,000 or $4,000 a year off of his 50 acres. $250,000 value, he had inherited it 40 years ago, so his cost basis was really low. And he was making his $3,000 or $4,000. Once he gave that into here, no tax on selling it. It's got more than $250,000 in it now because of the timing, and he's getting $12,000 a year. So he's actually getting more money, not paying real estate tax, and the church is guaranteed the gift because it's irrevocable and happens ahead of time. So these are the kind of gifts that the pastor doesn't usually stand up and say, hey, why don't you think about a charitable remainder unit trust to benefit the church? That's the reason we have a community foundation for the community called Church of the Nazarene, which is us, the Nazarene Foundation, to be able to explain some of these and work with donors that are in particular circumstances. So I would just want you to know that we have the expertise to do complicated gifts of businesses, real estate, and various things. We can also do charitable lead trusts. But these kind of gifts, these legacy gifts, are important because we're told to tell the next generation about the deeds of the Lord. And there's nothing more important in your legacy with your family than leaving a spiritual legacy. That's the number one most important thing. In addition to that, you can supplement that with blessing your family with assets and blessing your church with some of the assets. We encourage you to do that. We encourage you to make a nice gift to your local Church of the Nazarene in one of these ways. I'm coming pretty close to my deadline here. So how to ask for these? This is what I tell pastors. Teach this regularly. Talk about stewardship. Talk about gifting. Occasionally bulletin insert announcements. Legacy Sunday, I'm available. I go to Missouri churches and talk to Sunday school classes and talk at senior adult banquets and wherever I have. I really like it when we have young people because people with children, they seriously need wills done, or the probate court judge is going to decide who raises your children. So I really like it. In fact, I encourage churches all the time to have me come in and talk to a dozen young couples or two young couples, whatever you have. Pay for some pizza and a babysitter and let me talk to them for an hour or two about making a legacy gift and getting this part of their life stewardship all put together. Legacy Sunday, I do preach. I really am used to doing this in front of preachers, so I'm saying you should use us. You should have a foundation representative or Roger from the college come in and have personal conversations with people and talk to them about legacy gifts. So I'm available to the churches if anybody is interested in any such thing. Good? All right. I went through a lot. And I shaved off some stories this time. I didn't do as many stories. That's actually a little fast. It's only 3:38. I have a full 7 minutes. And don't want you to feel like you got less than your money's worth. Any questions? So you want to hear a fun story?
Sure.
About a gift. I have so many of them. They are just all kinds of fun. You want to hear about the Cy Twombly painting? Does anybody know that? Did I tell you this one? I didn't tell you this one. This is your first workshop?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting a little confused about who's been in here three times, and I'm trying not to tell the same stories. You've got all three of them. You want to tell the story?
I could.
So we had a lady that owned these paintings for a long time, and she wanted to give them to her local church. She knew they were valuable, and it was from the famous painter Cy Twombly. Look him up sometime. He's a scribble artist. Only thing he does is scribbles. And he had one painting sold for $72 million. So we're excited to get these, and we go through the process of making sure that we handle these responsibly. We get in front of the Antiques Roadshow people, actually an auction house that most of those people work at. And they knew we were coming with the Cy Twombly. So our representative, unfortunately about me, as much as I would have loved to do this, one of my employees got to do it, went into the there, and all these appraisers are talking to these people that he brought things in. And the president of the company comes out and says, "The Church of the Nazarene Foundation has arrived with the Cy Twomblys." And all of the appraisers left their people and crowded around my employee, who had two paintings. One of them looked like a barn and the other one was scribbling. So he pulled the barn painting out and they all moaned. Oh, no, it's a barn, you know. Pulled the scribble out and they were all like, "Wow, it's a Cy Twombly. Look at that thing," you know. So so they started evaluating it. They actually floated this painting around to various shows for a year, sent it to Europe and different things, and got it known in the art world. But they evaluated and they said, "You know, it's small. Most of his expensive paintings are big, but yours is only about this big. And yours is faded, and it's, you know, it's kind of bent on the corners and stuff, so it's not great condition. Most of Cy Twombly's paintings were oil on canvas, and yours is crayon on paper." And he usually signs the front, but this one's signed on the back. It's one of his earliest works, you know. "We don't think we can get more than $6,000 or $8,000 out of it." So we said, "Well, you know, $6,000 or $8,000 for a piece of crayon on paper is not the worst thing in the world. Let's go ahead and set this thing for auction." So they did a good job of letting the art world know about it, and it when the hammer came down, it sold for $67,500. And so I just say, you know, you should investigate the author or the artist there, because there's actually a book written, and the title of the book is called "Why Your Kindergartner Can't Scribble Like Cy Twombly." Because the first thing everybody does when my kids did that in kindergarten, you know. So the book says, you know, your kid can't scribble like Cy Twombly. But we were delighted to help make that money go to the thing. And we do get some fun non-cash gifts. We get excavators and an airplane back in Roger's day when he was working with the church, and various non-cash gifts that people are willing to give. Cool. All right. You want to be the first ones to the next session? Get a 2-minute longer break? I'm pretty much done unless you have questions. That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. All my information's downstairs, phone numbers and all that kind of stuff. So if you need something, I have some business cards over here too. But get that will done.